and welcome to another episode of the Macro Minutes podcast. In this episode, Money Control's Kamalika Ghosh talks to founder and CEO of Prima Dollar, Tim Nicol, to find out about trade finance and how it fared during the COVID-19 pandemic. They also talk about what is expected to happen as there are second waves of infection in the US and Europe and the upcoming inequality in vaccination across the world.
So, hello, Tim. Thank you so much for the time with Money Control. And we look forward to understanding, you know, the intricacies of trade finance and how that impacts the world of trade. So thank you so much for the time that you've given to us.
Yes, good morning from the UK, Kamalika. It's afternoon where you are, but still early morning for me here.
Sure. So, Tim, to begin with, if you could just give us a little bit of an understanding of, what is trade finance and how it works and, you know, why is it so important in international trade?
So that's easy. So trade finance is very simple. When an exporter puts goods on a boat or a plane or a train or a lorry, he wants to get paid. And the buyer wants normally to pay later.
Right.
And in between the exporter and the importer, the buyer, there's a question of trust because we're dealing with trade here. So trade is cross-border typically rather than just domestically. And so we might find that your exporter is sitting in India, but the buyer is in Colombia, for example. So who on earth is this buyer and can we trust him to pay us later? Is quite a significant issue.
Right.
And then there's a second dimension, which is, should the exporter hand over the goods before payment comes? Because those goods, whatever he's made, are typically forming part of the collateral that his own lenders will be relying on for finance. Often, when an exporter makes goods in his factory, he borrows money to do it. It's called pre-shipment finance. And of course, the lenders who provided all the finance for the pre-shipment phase, the making phase, don't want all the collateral sailing off into the sunset without the cash coming. So there are two dimensions here. One is the simple dimension of risk. And the second dimension is how that risk is then perceived in the domestic market of the exporter.
Right.
Where he's borrowing money to do his business.
Right. So, you know, now that we have a different situation with the COVID panning out, so how does this dimension change? Does it change or is the pre-COVID situation and the post-COVID situation with reference to trade finance remain the same?
That's a really good question, actually. So the basic issue with his exporters should be paid at shipment, buyers want to pay later, trade finance bridges the gap. Nothing's changed there.
Right.
What's happened because of COVID and the pandemic is the appreciation of this need is dramatically bigger, substantially bigger. And that's because a lot of shipments were done back earlier this year, Q1, Q2, where the buyers then cancelled the orders, sometimes even after the goods were on the water. And so that brought home the reality of the risk to the exporters and the local banks who were funding them, because they suddenly realized what risks they were running and how hard it is, in fact, to collect the money later if they didn't be shipped.
Correct.
So what's changed is the appreciation on the export side of what's really involved here, and therefore the demand for trade finance has just multiplied.
Because
if no trade finance, the exporter ships and crosses his fingers and hopes the buyer will pay. If there is trade finance, this trust question gets sorted out because trade finance steps in, pays the exporter at shipment, lets the buyer pay later, everybody's happy, and it's the trade finance product which is then absorbing this risk.
All right. So you just said that there has been a multiplication in the appreciation of trade finance, basically. So as a related question, I would want to understand from you, which sectors have you seen, the demand for trade finance shoot up, say, in India?
Well, the main sectors are where Well, in fact, I'd say it's across the board. It's across all supply chains.
Right. Because
buyers have asked for more credit than they used to. So buyers have had trouble. You know, every buyer in the world, with just a few exceptions, has suffered an economic hit.
Okay.
Yeah, because they've had, even if their home government has provided loans and provided cash flow and paid for employees who can't work, they still have had to pay the interest on their debts. They've still had to pay the leases. They've had to pay the property rent and so on. They've had lots of costs with no income. So pretty much every buyer in the world is poorer today than they were back in February.
Right.
And so every buyer has kicked that problem down the supply chain to the exporters, saying, okay, I know I used to pay you 14 days of shipment, but actually, you know what? It would be really convenient for me if we could agree I'll pay you 150 days after shipment on my new orders.
Right.
And that's a very common discussion that's going on at the moment. So, because for the buyers, it's not that they don't care. They care a huge amount, actually. It's just that they don't necessarily know what kind of problems they then kick down into their own supply chains when they pass the financing task and make the financing task bigger for the exporters. It's a tough, you know, we live in a tough world. The market is a tough market. And, of course, exporters want to meet the buyer's requirements if they can. So they then immediately start looking to, okay, fine, okay, the new order's come in. It's great. We've got a new order. That's good. We can get the factory working. Good news for us. Oh, hold on a second. He's not going to pay me now until much longer after shipment. How am I going to fix it? And that's where the demand for trade finance suddenly shoots up, because the exporter really does still need to be paid at shipment. Funding this long deferred period, taking the risk and getting the local bankers happy that it's okay to do it, those are difficult jobs.
Right. So have you seen any specific sectors where in India the demand has shot up, or you've seen a demand appreciation in the post-COVID world in India in specific sectors for trade finance?
I know you want to get into specific sectors, but this is a generic thing. We've seen it. Across the point is actually that it's everywhere, this problem. It's not, I mean, we can highlight sectors that have clearly got bigger issues than others. For example, the garment industry has got, I think, more challenges than other sectors, because a lot of garment retailers are bricks and mortar shops and not necessarily with good online.
Correct.
Of course, they've had to continue paying rent on all those shops, even if their local staff in their home market have been taken care of by the government with a furlough scheme or something. Still rent to pay, there's still stock to fund and inventory. And of course, garment retailing is seasonal. So you end up with shops in autumn full of summer clothes. So you have your problems with the fact that the stock is seasonal. You know, whereas obviously in other sectors, in manufacturing, supply chains, in pharmaceuticals and so on, there's much less seasonality. So the garment industry's had a tough time because of seasonality in the stock, because of the bricks and mortar side of their businesses.
Sure.
That means online.
Okay. Another thing that I want to understand from you is, you know, trade has been hit, like the entire situation or entire terms of doing trade has changed now. It's not really, I wouldn't say it began with COVID, but, you know, trade policies have become more internalized for most countries. And now with the COVID threat, how do you see Indian export-import changing? Like, do you see that there would be a significant impact of all these, you know, policy changes, and added to that the COVID situation? How would you assess the export import scene, the trade scene for India?
Well, we've got a number of interesting things all happening on top of each other here. So we have the Make in India program.
Yes.
We've also got got the fact that we can see clearly that there are disputes between India and China, and I can't comment on it. I'm British, okay. The local issues are not things I fully appreciate.
Right.
But we can also see that the new Pan-Asian Trade Pact has excluded India at this point.
Right. And
economists and politicians generally take a different view.
Right.
The impact of tariffs and trade barriers. Economists will generally say that's bad for economic growth.
Exactly. Yeah.
Politicians who may have different time frames in mind when they make their policy, and they see the social benefits of tariffs and restrictions outweighing the potential economic friction that they bring in, they may see those social benefits as more important. And that's not for us to judge. There's the golden rule always in business, which is to stay out of politics, don't forget.
So
all we can observe is that India has become less, has got more friction in its trading relations with its key partners than perhaps other countries in South and East Asia, which is a shame from a business perspective. And that will create changes in the way things work. Now, those changes for a trade finance company can work for more business for us and can work for less business for us. For example, Make in India program generally means that supply chains get more complicated.
Right.
So instead of importing a finished product, what happens is components and materials get imported, which are then assembled in India into the finished product. So those component and material-based supply chains are more complex. Often Indian importers are now dealing with a wider range of suppliers in more interesting and difficult geographies, and a larger number of suppliers who may not be as financially strong as a manufacturer of finished goods. And therefore, you find that trade finance becomes a lot more important when those complex supply chains start trying to work efficiently. Sorry. So that's a good example of where counterintuitively, what you think would mean you need less trade finance actually means you need more trade finance. And so it's really hard to predict actually what's going to happen as we move forward with India outside the Asian trade pact that's just been agreed, which is, I think, a good thing for business, I have to say. And it's a shame India's outside of it, and perhaps India will join at a later point when it makes more sense.
Right. Also, you know, the government is optimistic that, you know, their trades will pick up, you know, exports, which have been really hurt bad because of the COVID situation and the liquidity crunch that came about with the lockdown. So it will, you know, it will change and, you know, exports will pick up, is what the government sentiment is. As somebody who's working in the sector, what would your forecast be for exports? How do you see it picking up after the period of lockdown? And we've not really left the impact of COVID behind us. In fact, we're preparing for a winter surge and things like that. So in keeping in mind these, how fast or how soon do you see trade picking up?
I think it's going to vary from sector to sector. So there are some industries which will recover pretty quickly. I think retail is one of them. There are other sectors that are really going to take a long time to come back. I think in hospitality and certain sectors of hospitality, for example, if we make hospitality into a broad hospitality, travel and tourism, I think will take a while to come back. So if you're supplying, you know, seat covers for airlines, I'm afraid you've got quite a long road ahead of you. But if you're busy in production making t-shirts for the summer season in the Northern Hemisphere, the garment industry, you're probably going to be okay, because I think there's enough evidence now that the vaccines will have become sufficiently available and had an economic impact by the spring across the Northern Hemisphere. I realize India's in a different place in the queue compared to, for example, the US and the UK. We're lucky, and I really, you know, we employ a lot of people in India. I really hope that the vaccines can be made in sufficient volumes, because there's a billion people in India that really need plus need to be vaccinated for your domestic economies to get back in shape. But there's lots of grounds for optimism, but I think it's going to be patchy. It's not going to be universal. McKinsey had that very good analysis they did a while ago now, where they talked about 10 years of change, social behavior change, collapsed into 90 days. And I thought that was a really good way of thinking about what the pandemic has done.
Correct.
As business gets back to normal, it's getting back to normal with that social change now embedded.
Right. You know, liquidity has been a problem. It's not just, I wouldn't say it's just a COVID thing. There has been a lot of other things that have, you know, added to the liquidity issue. There was, you know, a GST that came, which also brought in with it the issue of liquidity for exporters. Then the withdrawal of the MEIS benefit. How do you see trade finance, you know, are, you know, offering, you know, any kind of help in case of, you know, targeted help in case of sorting out the liquidity crunch that exporters are seeing?
Well, trade financiers like us tend not to do targeted things. We're actually a constant friend in the sense that where we've got exporters who are trading with creditworthy buyers, so we're not sort of suicidal in terms of the credit risks we take. Okay? It's creditworthy buyers, really important concept here. But we are a constant friend because our funding is predictable, it's low cost, it's very, very reliable, and it's there. And although the volumes in different trade lanes and in different industry sectors go up and down, trade finance sectors up and down to meet what exporters need. Whilst these are consequences that have economic effects on the local markets, trade finance is always their friend. Now, when you talk about targeted help, if you, that's the job of government. It's not the job of the trade financier.
Are there any, you know, plans that trade finance companies can come up with, which could in turn help in the liquidity, solving the liquidity issues in terms of making the liquidity availability better for exporters?
Well, yes, there are actually. And so, for example, one of the initiatives we've taken is the launch of a new way of doing trade finance for large corporate importers. And that's relevant for India, not just in terms of India's exporters, but India's importers as well, actually. And GDP growth is driven by efficient financing of imports just as much as efficient financing of exports. Our supply chain trade finance platform allows an importer, India, US, wherever they are, take full control over how his international supply chain is funded and paid. And that will, and once we get those large importers onto our platform, the SME exporters, wherever they are in the world, will start to get cash shipment in a very, very efficient way, much more efficient than has ever been seen before in international trade. And that's because our platform delivers that finance directly to the exporter at shipment without a correspondent banking overhead, without the fees, charges, and time delays involved in traditional trade finance banking products. So this becomes a very, very efficient way for large buyers to look after their supply chains in with great efficiency and control. And it's a revolution in trade finance. Now, obviously, that doesn't help SMEs in India trading with SMEs in other countries, Germany, France. I mean, we're in 40 countries now, so we've got a good picture. But it actually, 80 or 90% of global trade is between small companies selling to big companies.
Right.
And so in time, these new platform technologies, like our platform, will transform the way big companies buy goods and services from smaller companies in other countries. And that will help absolutely push liquidity into those SME sectors very quickly. And we're already working on implementations of our platform for big buyers across Europe. It's a revolution that's going to come. And moving the world's reliance away from the letter of credit, which is a problem that works, it's just not very well, to much more efficient platform-based systems is going to really help the Indian SME exporter. And actually, of course, it'll help the large corporate importer in India with his extended supply chain out into other Asian countries.
Right. My last question would be a generic understanding from you about what is the market scenario that you as a trade finance company, you're observing right now? And, you know, what would be the strategy going ahead? Pre-COVID situation was different. It's a post-COVID world now. So how would strategy change in order to remain relevant and remain more, I think, the right way to put it would be become more robust in a post-COVID world?
I think there's an economic reality here, which is that business all around the world, with a few exceptions, like the Amazons, for example, or the food retailers, business all around the world has suffered an economic hit.
Right.
These are all importers who are not as financially strong today as they were a year ago.
Yes.
And one of the other things that we all know is that trade finance is usually an unsecured creditor. So usually the last person in the queue if something goes wrong with the buyer. And that's a pretty vulnerable position. So trade finance, in my view, is going to move substantially towards more secured arrangements with buyers where banks actually need to shoulder the burden, the working capital burden of funding that, of getting that cash out into the supply chain. So banks are usually secured creditors. Trade finance is usually in the unsecured category. So what we actually expect to see happening is that a lot more trade finance will be done by banks going forward, certainly for a year or two, whilst it becomes, whilst the dust settles and we can actually see who's still alive and who isn't, actually, to be honest. It's as tough as that. And so the real task that we've got is to work out how to channel that bank capability, the liquidity available from banks as secured creditors to large buyers. How do we channel that into the supply chains in an efficient way? And that's the task of a trade finance platform like us to solve that, so that Indian companies and Indian exporters and actually Indian importers have access to liquidity which is channeled properly into their supply chains, either they're supplying into or using themselves, but using secured funding from the bank rather than market funding that's unsecured. So I see this move from unsecured trade finance to secured trade finance. And then the question is, well, what's the mechanism by which that's made to happen? And the market is a tough mistress, you know. The market is pretty merciless. And the market, I think, will start to drive the way trade finance works. The market can be efficient, actually. And I can see that starting to happen quite quickly. Again, it's down to the McKinsey 10 years of change in 90 days kind of comment. We've got to be agile at this point. That's really important. Agile is a great word. That's really what we face. We face a test of agility as we go into 2021.
Correct. Thank you, Tim. Thank you so much for the time given to Money Control. It was a pleasure talking to you.
With that, it's a wrap on this episode of the Macro Minutes podcast. If you have any other queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.